This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. 32-year-old Portia Woodruff is suing the city of Detroit and the Detroit Police Department over her false arrest earlier this year. 8 months pregnant at the time of her arrest, Woodruff was mistakenly identified as a carjacking and robbery suspect with the use of facial recognition technology from footage gathered by the city's vast network of cameras. The technology has been shown to have a systemic bias, especially against African Americans. My guest is Diamond Hardiman, Reparative Justice Manager at Free Press's Media 2070. Welcome to the program, Diamond.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So first, tell us about what Portia Woodruff's story is and why it's sort of increasingly typical. It's not the first time that just the city of Detroit itself has mistakenly identified a Black person as a suspect in a crime, right?
No. And her story is part of a larger conversation about algorithmic bias and how surveillance technology is used disproportionately on Black people in Black communities, and we have disproportionate impacts. So it's just not just true in Detroit. I stay in Chicago, and there are large conversations about the ways that the criminal justice system is partnering with surveillance technologies to really bear down on the lives and the freedom of Black folks in the city.
So tell me more about the technology itself and why this technology has been found to have a bias. I understand that the creators of the technology take issue with the fact that their algorithms and their methods are biased against Black people in particular, but what sort of journalism has been done to show that actually these algorithms are deeply racially biased?
Yes, that's a really great question. One of a close friend of Media 2070, Sophia Noble, speaks about this a lot. Her and my colleague Joseph Torres have really dove into conversations about the material evidence behind algorithmic bias. Because it's not necessarily a widespread thing, because it's considered to be automated. It's considered to be numbers. And what they have uncovered and spoken about, and other investigative journalism pieces have spoken about, is how we have to look at the people and the companies that are creating these algorithms and are doing the coding behind this, and how the companies and their ideals and the people doing the coding can then code in biases against African-American people. And we can talk about how different technologies don't understand Black skin types. We can talk about how they mispicture of one Black person versus another because of the ways that the field is set up. And there's not as much Black ownership, there is not as many Black coders, and how that then shows up in the product and how it's implemented in communities.
So in the case of what Portia Woodruff went through, what do you think happened? And what has happened in cities like Detroit, especially where there is a large Black population and these technologies are being deployed pretty actively? You know, how does somebody get mistakenly identified?
Oh, that's a big question. What happened? I think there's a huge swirl of a lot of things that can happen. We've seen an huge increase in policing and budgets for policing, and that also includes increases in technologies and surveillance. We've also seen a huge boom in surveillance in general. And so that's one major factor. And then you also play in the media and journalism and the way we talk about crime and safety and what actually keeps people safe and where there are crime spikes and what communities commit crime and what safety means in those communities. So when you add those two things together, then you get policies and you get opportunities for minority communities, for Black communities, to then be experiencing policing at a higher rate. And then on top of that, you add technologies that weren't written with Black folks in mind, and you have, unfortunately, a moment like this where someone can get caught up in the justice system. And then on top of that, how are we advocating for those folks? How are we talking about those stories? And how do we value the voices of people that have been caught in the claws of the justice system? And how do we value the voices of Black women specifically?
So you mentioned the issue of journalism and how biased journalism plays into this. And I know that Media 2070 has worked on this quite a bit. Tell me a little bit more about that, how that combination of biased journalism in tandem with algorithmic bias makes for ongoing criminalization, particularly of African Americans.
Yeah, that's a really big topic, and I appreciate that question because there's a couple ways that they're intertwined. For one, when we're talking about journalism, we're talking about print journalism, but we're also talking about digital journalism. We're talking about all the ways that people get information, which also includes social media companies. It also includes media as a whole. And so when we're talking about the connections between algorithmic bias, and journalistic bias, they're kind of swimming in the same pools and investing in one another, in literal and figurative ways. And so these systems are swirling in the same atmosphere for one, but then for two, the journalism is also able to reinforce the ways that surveillance exists and shows up in people's lives. A lot of the work that I talk about and that my colleagues work on is the concept of crime coverage and how the crime beat historically actually has been anti-Black, but just thinking about the ways that we run crime stories, we run mugshots, and how we portray and characterize entire communities as criminal, and how stories like that build culture, they build narratives, which eventually can result in policies. We saw it happen with the war on drugs. We saw it happen with criminalization of Black folks as a whole. So when we think about the ways that journalism can create narratives and can create the floor for policy and also create the narratives for what we understand safety to be, that's really how they're interconnected with one another. So if journalism gives us the opportunity to say, this group of people is criminal, then there's an opportunity to for folks to come in and then say, well, we need to police them heavier. We need to police them with newer, better, more efficient technologies of policing. And then also when communities are speaking about the harms that they're experiencing and the real lived experiences of this policing, it's also not making it to the narrative. So that's how it kind of creates a cycle of reinforcing itself.
In terms of what happened to Portia Woodruff, what needs to be addressed immediately? The process of reforming journalism is a long, ongoing process, but at the very least, in order to kind of curtail the added criminalization of people of color through such facial recognition technologies that are deeply flawed, doesn't it make sense to just call for an immediate ban on these technologies? Like, for example, the city of San Francisco has already done, right?
Yes, I'm all for divestment out of technologies that cause harm on immediate timelines. From the moment that they're able to cause such catastrophic harm for one person.
Thank you so much, Diamond. Give out a website where people can find out more about the work that you do in with Media 2070.
You can find us at mediareparations.org.
That's mediareparations.org. We'll link to that from our website. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Diamond Hardiman, a reparative journalism manager at Free Press's Media 2070. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.